The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
And you tell them one thing, just win, baby.
I'd say it's today's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, 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 golden.
Bay's Golden Days, I'm Marcus Boucher, and welcome back to another week of NFL coverage right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. 13 weeks of the 2017 season are in the books, and man, oh man, do we have a lot to talk about as we had multiple division rivalries face off this week. We had Jimmy Garoppolo making his first start for the Niners, and we had the Raiders without Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper get a big W against the Giants to improve back to 500 and get back into a first place tie with the Chiefs and the Chargers in the AFC West. We'll go ahead from there and look at the matchup against the Chiefs next week for the Raiders in a huge AFC matchup. From there, we'll go on and look at every single other game from week 14 of the 2017 NFL season by the point spread so that we can win you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. But let's go ahead and start off with the first game that we won you some money off this week. That was the Raiders beating the Giants and covering that 6-point spread right here on the Bay's Golden Days, baby. That's how we do it. Oakland Raiders representing for the West Coast, the Best Coast, baby. Let's get it.
East Coast versus West Coast. The biggest rivalry in music history.
Biggie versus Tupac.
They won the East, we won the West.
The biggest story.
They call this one of the greatest rivalries in all of sports.
Everybody just get ready, sit back, and let's enjoy it.
Just win, baby.
Eli Manning will not start this week for the New York Giants. Geno Smith will start.
Let's find out what we got in here.
Raiders go into an eye on the Wale ahead of Marshawn Lynch. First and 10. Letting the chin strap of the logo at midfield off the right side. Big hole. Lynch is gone. 30, 20, 10, 5. Beast mode. Touchdown. Raiders. 51 yards. What a block length from Gabe Jackson. Washington to the left to Derek in the gun. It's a gun run coming right. Big hole. Left, Derek throws, caught, touchdown! Then he lost the ball.
Now it's a touchdown.
Raiders. Can I give you the full call? Touchdown, Raiders!
The West Coast is the best coast, and the Raiders beat the New York Giants 24-17 to cover that 6-point spread and improve to 6-6 on the year to get them into a 3-way tie for first place in the AFC West. Let's go. What the fuck did I tell all you people when the Raiders were sitting at 2-4, whatever their bad records were? We were sitting there in the Bay's Golden Days podcast, told you we still got a chance to get into a wild card and we still got a chance to win this AFC West. And here we are, week 13 of the 2017 season, and we are tied for first place with those Chiefs and with those LA Chargers. Let's fucking go. The Raiders win a huge game this week against the Giants to make it 2 straight. The Raiders have won back-to-back, and it looks like they're finally starting to get back on track. So let's go ahead and hop into this Giants game and look at all the storylines leading in. Obviously, the biggest news was Eli Manning bench. Yes, the Eli Manning, the younger brother of Peyton, the son of Archie, the head of the Manning family tree, Eli Manning gets benched. For who, you might ask? Geno Smith. Yes, Geno motherfucking Smith. Of course, this news came out last week after our podcast was published on Tuesday that Geno Smith would be filling in for Eli. Ben McAdoo is trying to evaluate the position. It sounds to me like he was just trying to pull something out of his ass that would maybe save his job. But this is the thing that's got me scratching my head. It's not like you benched Eli Manning for a rookie quarterback you just drafted. Like, it's not a Tony Romo, Dak Prescott situation, blah, blah, blah. This is Geno Smith. Geno motherfucking Smith is going to take Eli Manning, a man who has started 210 starts in a row for your franchise, the New York Giants. Eli Manning, the man who brought you two, not one, but two Super Bowl rings when he beat Tom Brady in the perfect season, Eli Manning. Yes, that same Eli Manning. You can't spell elite without Eli Manning. I know the jokes are always there for Eli. He does throw a lot of interceptions, but the man gets it done, and he is a franchise player for this New York Giants team, and Ben McAdoo benches him, and it is just so disrespectful. The disrespect to play Geno Smith over Eli Manning. How are you going to put the blame on Eli Manning for how bad the Giants are doing this year when their defense was a top 10 defense last year? They've been despicable. When they lost Odell Beckham, lost Brandon Marshall, they got no offensive line, they've got no run game, and you blame Eli Manning? Well, I guess as you guys can all know by the results by now, that wasn't a great call to save Ben McAdoo's job, because Ben McAdoo, you fired. The general manager for the Giants, you fired. I've never seen so much people blow up, and you saw all the Giants players saying that they're going to protest next week and show up in Eli Manning jerseys. Whatever. I don't care. Ben McAdoo, you're an idiot, but thanks for the win, because I said last week on the podcast, hey, I can't guarantee a win against the Giants because they took out the Chiefs earlier this year, but if I knew Geno Smith was playing, I would have guaranteed you that win, and that's exactly what the Raiders did. So let's go ahead and hop straight into this game. Forget the storylines, forget Eli Manning, forget Ben McAdoo. They don't matter because they didn't even play a factor into this game. Let's hop straight into the first quarter, where it was the Raiders defense coming out to play. They started the game with three straight three and outs. The defense came out aggressive and they came to play, and so did the Raiders offense, because on their first possession, we handed the ball off to Marshawn Lynch three straight times, and guess what? On lucky number three, Marshawn bust off a 51-yard touchdown. Beast Mode takes it all the way to the end zone, running behind Gabe Jackson, and Kelechi Osemele had a couple fantastic blocks on the run. He busts through right up the middle. He did pull his hamstring up a little bit, but you still couldn't catch the man. Hold my dick. That's a touchdown for Beast Mode, his longest run of the season, and Beast Mode starts off the game with a bang to go up 7-0, but the Giants did respond at the end of the first quarter with their own 11-play, 74-yard drive. This was led by the rookie Evan Engram and a couple penalties against the Raiders defense that helped sustain this drive late. They drive the ball down all the way to the 1-yard line, and Orleans Darkwa punches it in, and we got a tie ball game, 7-7, at the end of the first quarter. Going into the second quarter, the Raiders offense actually stalls out at midfield, and we get stuffed on a 4th-and-1. Marshawn Lynch lines up behind Jermaine Olawale, and he gets stuffed. I actually have no problem with this at all. We all remember Black Jack Del Rio a year ago, who's going for plays on 4th down all the time, and this is why we brought Marshawn Lynch in. It didn't work this time, but we saw later in the game that they did convert on a 4th-and-1. Marshawn Lynch did, and it worked out. So I got no problem with them going for it here. And honestly, really didn't even play too big of a factor, because once we gave the ball to the Giants at midfield, Bruce Irvin comes straight back with a strip sack. Navarro Bowman recovers. No harm, no foul. And the Raiders get the ball back at midfield, and they take the ball down the field, stall out in the red zone, turn it into a field goal. And the Raiders go up 10-7 right before halftime. But no, the action is not done yet, because with only a minute left and a half, the Raiders are about to punt. Marquette King is lined up near his own end zone, let me mind you. Before he even has a chance to kick the ball, he's getting tackled. Yes, Marquette King gets sacked. You're saying, what? He's a punter? He got sacked? But yeah, it was actually a pretty smart call. He actually didn't even try to kick the ball off, because if he tried to punt it, it probably would have got blocked. It probably would have went through the back of the end zone for either a safety, or if the Giants recovered it right there, it could have been a touchdown. So it was a pretty high IQ play right there by Marquette King to just take the sack, because guess who came to save the day? Khalil Mack. Strip sack Mack. Comes through, strips Geno Smith, recovers the own fumble. He damn near put him in a flying armbar looking like a young Demetrius Johnson. He straight stripped Geno Smith for everything that he owned, and the Raiders are able to keep the lead 10-7 at half. This was huge because the Giants easily could have got a field goal. They could have possibly scored a touchdown, but Khalil Mack comes through once again, strip sack Mack. The man can do it all, and he gets a huge play to keep the lead 10-7 at halftime. We go into the third quarter now, and the third quarter was a sloppy one. I'm not just talking about the Raiders, but from the Giants also. There were a combined 6 punts in the third quarter alone from both these teams combined. The only drive that the Raiders actually had a little bit of momentum on, they were driving the ball downfield. Derek Carr connects with Johnny Holton. Johnny Holton breaks free, but then he gets tackled and fumbles. Landon Collins recovers, and it's another turnover for the Raiders, but the Giants respond with another three and out, and this defense is just holding up all day. No harm, no foul once again as this defense comes through big, and we lead into the fourth quarter with the lead still rolling, and the Raiders offense finally starts rolling because the Raiders offense goes on an 8-play, 79-yard drive led by a screen pass to Cordell Patterson for 20 yards. Then we hit Marshawn Lynch on a huge third down and 7 conversion. Marshawn is not my favorite back to be receiving. Yeah, there were a couple targets he dropped. He had a few yards last week, but he comes up clutch in the fourth quarter on a check down pass from Derek Carr. He was short of the first down originally, jukes a guy and runs over two more, and Beast Mode puts his face mask down and gets those hard-earned yards, and the Raiders get a first down. Next thing you know, we got Johnny Holton tiptoeing in his Jordans down the sideline, makes a fantastic tiptoe 16-yard sideline catch. Johnny Holton has been stepping up huge, especially without Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper in this game. He had a huge game. This gets the Raiders down to the New York Giants 9-yard line, and on the next play, DeAndre Washington blasted in for a touchdown, and the Raiders go up 17-7, but the Giants are not done yet because Geno Smith finally gets the offense going. He hits Sterling Shepard for 47 yards, then he hits Evan Ingram for a 10-yard touchdown, and they're only down 17-14, and we got ourselves a ball game, folks, but Derek Carr wants to put an end to the Giants hype immediately. Him and Cordell Patterson come back again and connect on another screen pass, but this time this one goes for 59 yards as Cordell flash Patterson put on the burners and gets all the way down to the New York Giants 9-yard line. From there, Derek Carr then has to throw two touchdown passes because the first one he threw to Seth Roberts along the sideline, to me it easily looked like Seth Roberts had his knee down inside the pylon. It should have been called a touchdown, but they didn't have enough evidence, so they couldn't overturn it. Whatever the hell these jerk-offs in the NFL front office do. But they called it incomplete. But no worries, because Derek Carr then comes back with the very next play, and he hits Johnny Holton over the middle for a touchdown. Johnny Holton catches the ball, breaks the plane. Touchdown. Might be a fumble. Might be incompletion. Reviewed. It's still a touchdown. Either way, Cordell Patterson and Marshawn Lynch still made young Johnny Holton do some push-ups on the sideline for fumbling. Even though he got a touchdown, it doesn't matter. We broke the plane. We got the points, and the Raiders are now up 24-14, and there's about 2 minutes left in the game. The Giants are trying to drive down the field. Evan Ingram makes an unbelievable one-handed catch, but then they get into a 3rd-and-5 situation, and the man that has been playing phenomenal inside, DeNico Autry, comes up once again and gets another sack for consecutive weeks, and the Giants then have to settle for a field goal. Puts them down 24-17. The Raiders then recover the onside kick with DeAndre Washington, and they leave DeAndre Washington in the game to get that first down dagger. The Raiders take a knee, victory formation, and the Raiders win 24-17. This was a true dominating game again. Just like I said last week against the Broncos, it looks closer than it is because of a couple garbage time touchdowns in the fourth quarter. But at the end of the day, the Raiders, I wasn't really worried at all, especially playing against Geno Smith. I was not in fear for my life at all, in fear for being a Raiders fan, because I pretty much knew that we would win this game as long as we didn't have no costly turnovers. Derek Carr played phenomenal, even though he almost did have a couple turnovers. There were a couple interceptions that were dropped. But at the end of the day, Derek Carr ended completing 22 of his 36 passes for 287 yards, a touchdown. And like I said, no interception, a couple drops, but those weren't the only drops on the day. The wide receivers had 4 drops. Now the Raiders are tied for the lead NFL in drops by wide receivers, and Derek Carr has lost over 300 yards this season due to drops from wide receivers, and that's not even counting the yards after the catch. Those are just balls in the air, all the yards that we drop. But hey, it doesn't even matter because we got the win. I got to focus on the positive, not the negatives, because even though there was 4 drops, there was 8 different wide receivers who caught the ball. Yes, Derek Carr completed passes to 8 different wide receivers, and I mentioned it before the show started. They had to step up because with no Michael Crabtree serving in suspension and no Amari Cooper recovering from that concussion and that ankle injury, we needed some wide receivers to step up, and that's exactly what they did. Cordell Patterson had 4 catches, 97 yards, had screen passes, had a couple rushes, and he is just making phenomenal plays on special teams once again. This guy is one of the best gunners in the league on the punt team. He gets down there and makes tackles like no other. The only thing I want to see him more incorporated on is punt return, because Jalen Richard keeps on fumbling balls. We got Cordell Patterson back there for kick returns. I would love to see Cordell Patterson be the return man for punts as well. But receiving wise, he did step up. He was a former first round pick by the Minnesota Vikings. They never really figured out how to use him, but he has been a huge factor for this offense so far. Seth Roberts was the next leading wide receiver with 5 catches for 46 yards. He should have had that touchdown, like I mentioned, but it ended up going to Johnny Holton, who ended the day with 3 catches for 39 yards. He had those great catches on the sideline. And I also want to give a shout out to Clive Walford for stepping up. This was a game that I thought Jared Cook would have a huge game, but it was actually Clive Walford who had 4 catches for 57 yards. He was lining up in the slot a lot, and that really mixed up our offense and our looks and getting over the middle. I thought he played great. Jared Cook could have been involved more, but at the end of the day, Derek Carr completing passes to 8 different wide receivers, could have had a couple touchdowns, but I will take the day from Derek Carr as long as we get the win, because honestly, the MVP of the offense today was Marshawn Lynch. Some of that money Lynch, son. He played so well in this game that he had to be drug tested after the game for quote-unquote his ding ding sauce. Yes, Marshawn Lynch said it himself. I gotta go. They're trying to test me for my ding ding sauce. And hey, I guess if you run for over 100 yards for the first time in like 3 years, you're gonna get tested. This was Marshawn Lynch's first 100 yard game as a Raider. He finished the day with 17 carries for 101 yards. As I mentioned, he came up huge with that third down conversion, receiving the ball. He had that huge 51 yard touchdown to start the game. And I've been saying it for week and week and week. Marshawn has been looking better and better and better ever since his suspension. He has been playing with a chip on his shoulder. He has been running straight downhill. And according to Pro Football Focus, I'm not the only one seeing it, because Pro Football Focus, according to their grades, Marshawn Lynch has had his 3 best weeks of the season in the past 3 weeks. So 3 weeks, Marshawn is playing well, and this is exactly when we need him to be playing well. Because if he gets the ball rolling, this offense gets the ball rolling, we score points, we're actually looking like a top 10 offense that we were last year. I don't know, because as I said last week with the Broncos, I had to put an asterisk. We were playing the Broncos. When we played the Giants this week, I'm going to have to put an asterisk because we're playing the Giants. This was a team that the Niners beat, so I can't get too happy, but the Raiders ran the ball all over them. They improved to 8-0 since 2016 when they rushed for 2 touchdowns. So you can see how big of a factor the Raiders' offensive line, they're blocking well, and if they can get the running game going, they're a whole different team. But like I said, the asterisk for the Giants, and I got to put an asterisk when I talk about the defense, because we all know the story of Ken Norton getting fired. John Pagano comes in, takes over last week. The Raiders get 5 sacks. Well, they had 3 more today. That means there's been 8 sacks in the last 2 games. We only had 14 sacks total through the first 10 games of the season, so it's great to see that the defense is stepping up. For the back-to-back games now, we have held our opponent to under 300 total yards, and we held the Giants to a 35.7 third down conversion rate. That's only 5 for 14 converting on third down. Earlier in the year, we were letting teams convert on damn near 45-50%. I thought the defense played great. Mack, Irvin, and Autry, once again, I talked about them all last week on the podcast. Those three had sacks again. Of course, Irvin's and Mack's were of the strip sack variety. Khalil Mack, this man is just a monster. He had 11 quarterback pressures this game, 11 of them. And I mentioned it last week with John Pagano, mixing him up, moving him around, putting him over a guard so he gets a one-on-one matchup, moving him to middle linebacker sometimes and just sending him straight on a blitz like the Texans have been doing with Jadeveon Clowney, and we see all the improvement that he's had in his game. Khalil Mack is being moved around, being matched up. If you don't know where he's lining up, you can't double, triple team him and send an extra running back and tight end to chip him, because you can't do that if he's lining up over the center. You can't do that if he's moving. I thought this defense played great, and Navarro Bowman gets his first fumble recovery. He led the team in tackles once again. He has been huge for this defense ever since signing with the Raiders a couple weeks ago. Obviously, we can see what we have been doing to the run game the past couple weeks. Yes, it is the Giants and the Broncos, but I will take the improvement. The DBs have been playing better. Sean Smith looks like he's actually getting some more press and man coverage, which he specializes in, and he has been playing a lot better. And I got to give a shout out to the youngster, Dexter McDonald. He also played well with David Amerson dealing with his injuries, with Garyon Conley out with his Achilles injuries. The youngin' Dexter McDonald has stepped in, and he's played well. And honestly, everybody's playing well right now, and this is the time we need to play well, because we are back to 6-6 and back to a first-place tie in the AFC West, just like I told you how many weeks ago. Damn, you can probably go onto every single podcast, and you'll get the quote of me saying, the Raiders are still alive. Put your money where your motherfucking mouth is. The Raiders are going to the wild card. The Raiders still got a chance to win the AFC West. And I'm looking like motherfucking Nostradamus out here, because everybody's like, oh my God, the Raiders, they're actually surprised. Well, guess what? I'm not surprised, motherfucker, because I've been saying it all season long right here on the Bay's Golden Days, baby. Let's go. Raiders back in first place, and they have a huge game next week against the Kansas City Chiefs. But before we get into week 14 of the 2017 season, you know we got to recap week 13 of the 2017 NFL season and look at every single game to see where we won you some money. So let's go ahead and hop into week 13 of the NFL season. But before we get there, there are no more numbers of the week. There's no more NFL in 60 seconds. I'll admit it, I steal those videos off of YouTube, but whoever's in charge of those YouTube channels is fucking terrible. They don't even put them up every week. That's why we've had some numbers, some previews, some blah, 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 blah. It doesn't matter. You guys suck, NFL. Your YouTube channel is terrible. So you guys all know that I bring in Randy Moss to do Straight Cash, homie. Well, it looks like we're getting another superstar on the show now. Here is Deion Sanders, primetime top five players of week 13.
That's right, baby. My top five, not yours. You remember, you got to win to get in. Here goes my five. Number five, Robbie Gould. 5 for 5 in field goals. 24-yard game winner versus the Bears. And he's the Bears' all-time leader in points. And he gets revenge on his former team, scoring all 15 points in a 49ers win. Yeah, I did say 49ers win. Number four, hey, this is no misprint. This is real, baby. Blake Bortles, 26 for 35, 309 yards passing, 2 TDs versus the Colts. Second game of the season with Bortles passing for over 300 yards. Xavier Howard, that's right. 5 passes defense, 2 interceptions, and 1 return for the TD versus the Broncos. 9 points is the fewest points allowed by the Dolphins this season. Awesome. Number two, the Rams defense. 6 sacks, 2 interceptions, and 1 return to the house versus the Cardinals. Alec Ogletree with the pick 6. Man, these Rams ain't no joke, man. They got a shot at that. Oh, that looked like that hurt. And number one, Alvin Kamara. LT says this guy's a rookie of the year. I say this guy's rookie of the year. I even think Chris Rose said this guy's rookie of the year. And he ain't talking about baseball, baby. 60 yards rushing, 2 TDs, 66 receiving yards versus the Panthers, 100-plus scrimmage yards in 5 straight games. Longest active streak in the NFL. He is number one.
There you have it. Prime Time's top five players week. And remember, you got to win to get in. Let's go ahead and talk about the teams that did win in week 13 of the 2017 season. The Chiefs and the Jets will be the first game we talk about as we discuss this three-way tie for first place in the AFC West. Man, oh man, what a crazy, crazy, wild, wild West that we are walking to, because the Chiefs have lost again. They've now lost 4 in a row, and that makes it 6 out of their last 7. They lost to the Jets. The J-E-T-S. Jets, Jets, Jets. Let's go. 38-31. The Jets get it done. And you can't even blame Alex Smith. You can't blame Tyreek Hill. You can't blame Travis Kelce. You can't blame this offense, because this Chiefs offense put up 31 points. Alex Smith had 4 touchdowns. Count them, 4. 2 to Tyreek Hill, 2 to Travis Kelce. But it was this Chiefs defense that absolutely fell apart. They thought they could sign Darrelle Revis and it would fix their problems, but he has been getting beat up in the slot. Man, oh man, the Chiefs are falling quick, and what a free fall it is. They had a chance to stop the Jets from scoring the game winning touchdown late, but they just fell apart. Literally, like, there is a penalty after penalty after penalty. It was got so bad to the point where Marcus Peters picks up the penalty flag, launches it into the crowd, leaves the team, didn't even get ejected, but he goes into the locker room anyways, comes back with his socks off. I don't know what the hell is going on with Marcus Peters. That's some town business for you, but I don't care, because he helped out the town business with the Chiefs getting another loss. They're sitting at 6-6, and now we're all tied up. It's the Raiders, the Chiefs, and the Chargers. Anybody's game, and we'll talk even more about these Chiefs as we get the previews for the Raiders game coming up. But let's go ahead and talk about those San Diego Chargers, who got a big win over the Browns, 19-10, to improve to 6-6, and as I mentioned, are tied for first place in that AFC West. This is a game, though, that we actually won you some money here on the Bay's Golden Days, because we picked against the Chargers, and we picked the Browns plus 14 points. The Chargers only won by 9. So, of course, that means we won you some money right here with the Cleveland Browns. How many people are winning you money off of betting off the Cleveland Browns? Well, hey, we just got it done right here on the Bay's Golden Days. Phillip Rivers threw for 344 yards and a touchdown to Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen has been on fire these past 3 weeks. He ended the day with 10 catches for 105 yards. He eclipsed 1,000 yards on the season for the first time since his rookie year, and he has now had 10 catches for 100 yards and a touchdown 3 games in a row now. He really did outshine the return of Josh Gordon, which all the Cleveland Browns fans were waiting for and were hoping that they could somehow get a win with the man Josh Gordon. He ended the day with 4 catches, 85 yards, got up and over the Chargers corners, because these Chargers corners are a little bit underrated. I feel like they don't get talked about too much, but the only other wide receiver who's gone for more than 75 yards this year was Odell Beckham, and that's like back in week three, because obviously Odell Beckham's been hurt for half the season. Josh Gordon comes out of retirement. The return since 2014. He's been sent out for 3 years and puts up four catches for 85 yards. So shout out to Josh Gordon. But the Browns did not get the win, but they won you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. So we got nothing to complain about. We'll keep it moving now and finish off this AFC West as we had the Broncos and the Dolphins. And this was a game that I told you last week I did not want to bet on at all. I went back and forth. Broncos, Dolphins, Broncos, Dolphins. I thought, hey, maybe I'll just bet on the Broncos defense to slow down Jay Cutler. But no, they lit up 35 points to the fucking Dolphins. The Dolphins that were embarrassed 3 weeks in a row, national television. The Raiders came in, beat the brakes off them. The Broncos, I thought they could stay competitive in this game, but they lost 35-9 to Jay Cutler and the Dolphins. How embarrassing for the Broncos. They have now lost 7 straight and are officially eliminated from playoffs. And after this performance on Sunday, they deserve to be eliminated for the next few years because Trevor Siemian got to start because Paxton Lynch hurt his ankle last week. I said last week maybe they would have had a better chance if they started Siemian. Well, Siemian came out and threw 3 interceptions. The Broncos also gave up 2 safeties. They had a pick 6 they gave up. This Dolphins defense really did dominate it. And then you get on top of that, Jay Cutler throwing for 2 touchdowns, 235 yards. Kenyon Drake stepped up huge with all the running back injuries that they've had. He had 23 carries for 120 yards and a touchdown. And the Dolphins get the job done to improve to 5-7. I guess they technically still keep their playoff hopes alive, but who really thinks the Dolphins and Jay Cutler are going to get in? Not me. I'm not going to bet on that. Our only team I'll bet on from the AFC East is those Patriots. Now we had a matchup between the Patriots and the Bills in the AFC East, and surprise, surprise, the Patriots won. 23-3, cover that 8.5-point spread to win you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days, and this is now Tom Brady's 27th win against the Bill. That's the most by any quarterback against any team. It doesn't matter who. Brett Favre had that record before. Now it's Tom Brady, 27 wins against the Buffalo Bills, and man, oh man, the Buffalo Bills sitting at 6-6. They thought their playoff hopes were still alive. They got Tyrod Taylor back to starting quarterback. Well, I got some bad news. You're going back to Peterman because Tyrod Taylor was carted off the field with an injury, and now what are the Buffalo Bills going to do except for lose the next couple games? I would say that the Bills are now sitting at the bottom, dare I say rock bottom, because Rob Gronkowski straight up rock bottom. Tre'Davious White, he hit him with the people's elbows. He straight slammed a form into the back of that head. If you want to add injury to insult, Rob Gronkowski, after Brady throws a rare interception, like I said, dropped the people's elbows on the back of Tre'Davious' White head. He is now suspended for a game. I'm sure he's going to get fined. Gronk, that's a big no-no. Even though he had 9 catches, 147 yards, I don't know what he was thinking. He gets suspended, but the Patriots, they play in the worst division in the NFL. They're sitting at 10-2. They're going to have another winning season, and they're going to get right back into the playoffs. So who really cares what the Bills are going to do? This suspension's not going to affect them at all. We'll move on now to the Colts and the Jaguars as we move on from the AFC East to the AFC South. We got a couple division matchup games this week, and it was the Colts being eliminated from playoffs by their own Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jaguars improved to 8-4 by getting a 30-10 win and covering that 9-point spread to win you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. And Blake Bortles, you heard it. Prime Time's top 5 players of the week included Blake Bortles. Blake threw for 309 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Yeah, it was a miracle, but yeah, they're playing against the Colts defense. What'd you expect? Leonard Fournette had 20 carries, 57 yards, did have a touchdown. There's been a lot of people complaining about his production lately. He came out on Twitter and said, hey, I'm running against 11-man box. Shut the fuck up with your Twitter fingers. You don't know what you're talking about. He's running against the whole entire defense. And well, hey, Blake Bortles took advantage of those stack boxes, went deep, hit Marquise Lee for a touchdown. He ended with 7 catches, 86 yards. And it really is this Jacksonville Jaguars defense stepping up once again. Calais Campbell has probably been one of the best free agent pickups for the Jaguars this season. He set a season sack record for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's now got 12.5 on the year. Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Boye are one of the best defensive back pairings in the league, and this team is really looking like a playoff threat. We'll see what happens. On the flip side of the ball, I want to give a quick shout out Frank Gore. He moved into number 5 all time in rushing yards, passing Jerome Bettis and a couple of other people, so we'll give some respect to the OG on the podcast. But at the end of the day, the Colts are eliminated from playoffs. They'll be now sitting back waiting for Andrew Luck to return next year, and the Jaguars now sitting tied for first with an 8-4 record with, guess who, those Tennessee Titans, as they get another win to improve to 8-4. before, as I mentioned, as they got a win over the Texans 24-13 to cover that 7-point spread. And this was one that came down to the last run of the game, as Derrick Henry individually won all of you some money this weekend, as he came up with a huge 75-yard dagger, the touchdown to win it all, to cover the spread. After this game was tied 10-10 through three quarters, Derrick Henry said, "Hey, I put some money on this game. We got to win by 7. They're already winning," but he put the dagger in the 75-yard touchdown run after Delanie Walker's game-winning touchdown put him up 17-10. They ended up winning 24-13. And man, oh man, Derrick Henry winning you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. And this was a game that the Texans really did screw up, because they actually had a chance down 17-10 with 2 minutes left. They got into a 4th-and-4 situation, and they had 3 straight false starts. 3 of them. They turned a 4th-and-4 into a 4th-and-19, and then they converted, but then threw a game-ending interception, and that's when Derrick Henry came in with the 75-yard touchdown, put the dagger in, cover that 7-point spread, keep the Titans in first place, and win you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. That's what we're talking about. Shout out to Derrick Henry with the last-minute cover, but we won you some money. And let's talk about a team and a division that should be winning us money this year, and that is the AFC North and the Pittsburgh Steelers, as they win once again to improve to 10-2, 23-20 over the Bengals. And once again, here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast, we picked the Steelers to win, and they didn't cover the spread. They did not hit that 5-point spread against a division rival. I guess I should have known this, because the Steelers playing against the Ravens, playing against the Bengals, even against the Browns. It feels like in that AFC North, all these games are decided by 3 points, but I thought the Steelers would run away. They actually came back huge in this game, because they were down 17-0, kicked a field goal, and they were down 17-3 at halftime. But the Bengals really did screw themselves over, as they had 173 yards of penalty. Yes, 173 yards, and it backed them up, and they still only lost by 3. They could have had a chance to win this game, but this game was just hard-hitting, smash-mouth football, AFC North to the definition, because we had guys leaving left and right. There were a couple scary injuries. Ryan Shazier laid a hit. Next thing you know, he's laying on the ground holding his back. His legs are not moving. Then we had Joe Mixon leave the game. Then we had Vontaze Burfict get blown up by Juju Smith-Schuster on an absolutely beautiful crackback. But you can't do that in today's NFL, because we're in the fucking flag football league. But hey, there were a lot of big hits in this game. That's the AFC North, and that is football. I don't get why people are trying to change the game. I've said it 1,000 times before. We're going to devolve back into flag football. No one's going to be able to touch anybody. It's going to go down to 7-on-7, and they're going to get rid of the linemen. But, hey, as far as today's concerned, the Steelers played some smash-mouth football. They got the job done 23-20. Big Ben had 290 yards, 2 touchdowns. AB had another touchdown after getting 8 catches for 101 yards playing on a hurt toe. And you want to talk about toes? Let's talk about Le'Veon Bell tiptoeing down the sideline. This man had 76 rushing yards. Oh, yeah, he did add another 5 catches for 106 receiving yards. Le'Veon Bell, one of the best dual-threat running backs in the league, absolutely tiptoed down the sideline, faked out the whole team. They scored, and the Steelers ended up winning the game on a game-winning field goal by Chris Boswell once again, and the Steelers are truly running away from that AFC North. We got the Bengals falling to 5-7 now. The Ravens still sitting there after getting a win against the Lions this week at 7-5. Let's go ahead and talk about those Ravens now, because they're actually sitting in a wild card spot after beating the Lions 44-20, and this is a game that I picked wrong. I thought Lions and Matthew Stafford would bounce back, but Matthew Stafford ended up actually hurting his hand in this game. He ended the day with 292 yards, a touchdown, and an interception late that really did put the dagger in. The Ravens, with that interception by Eric Weddle, the pick six. Joe Flacco gets his 100th win of the season. Alex Collins did a great job on the ground, run the ball, and Mike Wallace through the air. The Ravens, I've said it every time, I just don't want to bet on them. I don't want to pick against them, because John Harbaugh and that defense can keep any game close. And if Joe Flacco doesn't throw an interception, they got a chance to win. It's those games where Joe Flacco tries to do too much, tries to push the ball downfield, creates too many interceptions, too many turnovers, and they lose. If Joe Flacco can just do what he did on the Super Bowl run and not turn the ball over, the Ravens really do got a chance in the wild card team because of that defense and because of their coaching. So we'll see how things shake out, but hey, in my opinion, I'm just hoping they lose out and the Raiders catch them and get that wild card spot. But we'll go ahead and move on now. As we finished up that AFC North, we talked about the Ravens, Browns, Steelers, Bengals. We'll move on and talk about the Lions division. That's the NFC North, and we'll go ahead and talk about the number one seed, not only in the NFC North, but now in the NFC. That is the Minnesota Vikings with a 10-2 record, and because of strength strength of schedule, they are officially the number one seed in the NFC. I picked against them. I picked the Falcons. I thought their firepower would be too much, but Matt Ryan got shut down by this Vikings defense because it seemed like the Vikings defense was too much. Matt Ryan only had 173 yards, and it ended his 30-game touchdown streak. No touchdowns at all for the Falcons. Just field goal, field goal, field goal. Xavier Rhodes did a fantastic job locking up Julio Jones. He's been one of the few corners in this league who has had success against Julio. And the Vikings defense, like I said, they're number one on third down conversion, not only on defense, but also on offense. Case Keenum has been so effective, so productive, which nobody thought at all when you get down to your third string quarterback. He threw for 227 yards, two touchdowns. Latavius Murray did all the work on one drive to get him down to the goal line after having 16 carries, 76 yards. It was McKinnon who punched it in, and Thielen was the leading receiver once again. His Vikings are just too effective. They don't turn the ball over. They don't make mistakes, and they play solid defense, and they are now the number one seed in the NFC with Case Keenum as a quarterback. I can't believe it, but hey, this is what the 2017 NFL season has represented. You can't expect anything. There's been so much parity in the NFL, and anybody can win on any given Sunday. But let's go ahead and keep it moving now as we talk about the NFC North and the NFC South. We had another matchup between the Buccaneers and the Packers, and this is a game that I told you, take the Packers -1, and they ended up winning in overtime to cover that spread and winning some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. It was Joe Williams who had 21 carries, 113 yards, and a touchdown, and he drove him all the way down the field in overtime, and then Aaron Jones comes in and finishes off with that overtime game-winning touchdown. Jameis Winston returned from injury in this game and did have two touchdowns to Cameron Bray, but with no Doug Martin, they got the job done with Peyton Barber, but this offense truly didn't look all there. They got the game into overtime, but Brent Hundley was able to just keep on handing the ball off and handing the ball off, because honestly, he only threw for 84 yards and an interception. Hopefully, the Packers are thinking they can get Aaron Rodgers back next week, if not the week after. If they can return, the Packers are now sitting at 6-6. They still got a chance to make a wild card run. We'll see. Maybe if Aaron Rodgers comes back next week, you can never really bet against Aaron Rodgers. But for now, they got the win and won you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. Moving on next from the Packers and the Buccaneers, we'll talk about the NFC North's last place team, and that is the Bears. And they played the last place team from the NFC West, and that was the Niners. And what else would you expect besides an absolute shit show between the two bottom dwellers of the basement of the NFC West and the NFC North, the 49ers and the Bears? And surprise, surprise, the Niners got the win. And I was just going back and forth last week on the podcast saying, hey, Jimmy G gets the first start. I haven't been impressed by the Bears all year. They might get the job done. Jimmy G playing in his own hometown. But I had to take the Bears because I thought they could run the ball. I didn't think the Niners defense was all that great from watching them so much this year. But the Niners actually got the job done. I think this is the first time that I've picked wrong against the Niners this year, because I've picked them with the spread to lose. I picked them the one game that they would win, and I've actually been calling the Niners pretty good so far this year, and I was so close to picking Jimmy G for his win, and I should have just stuck with my gut, but I wanted to wait a game. Well, Jimmy Garoppolo ended the day with 293 yards and an interception to start the game. He did come out a little shaky with that interception with the first missed pass, but at the end of the day, he controlled the clock. He was a great game manager, in my opinion, and he controlled the time of possession. They had the ball 39 minutes compared to the Bears 21 minutes of play. Get this, the 49ers ran 73 plays on offense. The Bears only ran 36. Now, I don't know who to credit the defense, the offense, the great time management. They had the ball for damn near 18 minutes more than the Bears did. Jimmy Garoppolo really didn't have to do too much. Carlos Hyde didn't have to do too much. Marquise Goodwin had 89 yards, didn't need to do too much, because it was all Robbie Gould. Yes, you heard it in primetime's top five performance of the week. Robbie Gould, the former Bear, the all-time leader in Bears points, beats the Bears after they cut him. He puts up 15, five field goals, 5-5-5, and they get the job done. This was truly an ugly game to watch. I guess Niner fans were excited to see Jimmy Garoppolo. If there's anything to say about Jimmy G, I'd say that he looked like a good game manager in his first game, but nothing to expect a playoff run next year. He was still getting beat up. He still got sacked 5 or 6 times. Your offensive line is still terrible. This defense was able to contain the Bears, but that's not saying much. I was surprised. I thought Jordan Howard would run for more. He only had 13 carries, 38 yards. Trubisky, 100 yards, one touchdown. They just couldn't get anything going. The only side of offense was was Tariq Cohen, who had a 61-yard punt return touchdown. But, hey, this was just an ugly game. But Niner fans got to be happy. They got their guy. They got their quarterback, supposedly. If they're even going to keep him, they might just franchise him this year and trade him for a first-round pick. Those are the rumors. I don't know. I don't care. The 49ers, though, get a win. And at the end of the day, they just screwed themselves. Yeah, it's nice to get a win, but you're doing the same exact thing you did last year. You're winning meaningless games to knock you out of a top three draft pick. What are you doing? I don't know, but the Niners, I guess, hey, it's good for morale. You got to win. Congratulations. You're not going to the playoffs. You are already eliminated. And it's going to be a while until you climb back up in the NFC West because, obviously, with all this young talent, let's go ahead and move on from the Niners and talk about a division game. We had the Rams and the Cardinals. You want to talk about young talent? Let's talk about these Rams because Jared Goff, 220 yards, two touchdowns, did have an interception, but this man has made incredible steps from his rookie season. Todd Gurley had a great day. He was a leading receiver and rusher after having 19 carries for 74 yards and also having six catches for 84 yards. The Rams defense, though, comes up big. Six sacks, two interceptions. Alec Ogletree, the middle linebacker, actually had a pick six as they absolutely dominated the Cardinals and cover that 7-point spread right here on the Bays Golden Days to win you some money. The Cardinals were struggling with Blaine Gabbert. I got to give a shout out, though, to OG Larry Fitzgerald, who's still producing with any quarterback he has. It's pretty much been his life story with the Cardinals. He had 10 catches, 98 yards, and a touchdown. He's now the fourth wide receiver with 1,200 reception, and he's fourth all-time on the receiving list. So we got to give some props and give some shout-outs to Larry Fitz, still getting a job done. But at the end of the day, the Rams win 32-16, improved to 9-3, and they have clinched their first winning season for the first time since 2003. So congratulations, Rams. The Raiders last year got their first winning season. The Rams are back. If only it was the Raiders and the Rams down in L.A. instead of those shitty-ass Chargers, we would run L.A., but that's another story for another day and another podcast. We'll keep it moving now as we finish up that NFC West. We had the Seahawks taking on the Eagles in what could possibly be the game of the week. The Seahawks absolutely came out to play. The 12th man, whoever was there, they had 13, 14, 15 man because Carson Wentz was pretty much slowed down for the first time this year. The Seahawks got the job done 24-10. I actually told you to take the Eagles minus 5 points because I thought Carson Wentz would actually have a great day against his Legion of Boom that has been dissected by injuries. No Richard Sherman, no Cam Chancellor. I thought that he would have a chance because he's been one of the leading MVP candidates this year. He ended the day with 348 yards. And a touchdown. He did have an interception, but in the first half, he only had like 37-50 yards. So 200 of those yards, 250 of those yards came late in the game. A little bit of garbage time. Nelson Aguilar had a late touchdown to end the day with 7 catches for 141 yards. They couldn't get the running game going because they were down 10-0 in the first quarter after Russell Wilson drops 227 yards, 3 touchdowns. He hits Jimmy Graham early. Russell Wilson is just getting the job done on all assets of the game. I've mentioned it so many times on this podcast. He's what, equivalent to 90% of the Seahawks' total offense. He's their leading rusher. This man does it all. He's got 29 touchdowns on a season. You know who else has 29? Carson Wentz. And Carson Wentz has been getting a lot of the MVP talk. I think Russell Wilson might have just took a little bit of his shine in the NFC for sure because Russ has been phenomenal for the Seahawks team. They're now sitting with an 8-4 record, sitting in the wild card spot. And he, like I said, has been the offense. He's the leading rusher, leading passer. Hell, if he was the receiver, he'd probably be the leading receiver too. Russell Wilson is getting the job done every way he can, and he's truly carrying this team. The connection he's built with Jimmy Graham lately has been phenomenal, and if they can keep that connection going to the playoffs, even without Cam Chancellor, without Richard Sherman, they still got a chance to knock a couple teams off, and his defense really did play well without their superstars, and they got the job done 24-10. We'll go ahead and talk about the NFC East now as the Eagles left an opening for someone to try to creep back, but like I said last week, the Cowboys are just too far back, even though they got a win over the Redskins 38-14 and cover that 1.5-point spread to win you some money right here on the Bays Golden Days as the Cowboys get their first win without Ezekiel Elliott. Wow, what a surprise, what a surprise. Dak Prescott actually threw for 2 touchdowns, only had 102 yards though. He threw a great pass to Dez Bryant where he mossed Breshad Breeland. He had 5 catches, 61 yards, and the Cowboys were doing it everywhere they can with Alfred Morris having 27 carries, 127 yards, and Ryan Switzer had a punt return TV. The Redskins are looking done. They're looking like you stick a fork in them and the Cowboys are still trying to keep alive. Four games left. We'll see if they can get a wild card spot. We shall see. We shall see. And then we'll move on to our last division game of the week. We had the Panthers and the Saints, and the Saints got it done 31-21. This is a game that I thought was going to be high scoring, and it did cover that over on that last touchdown from Cam Newton to Devin Funchess. But really, the story of this game was the Panthers reverting back to their running game struggles. Cam Newton was their leading rusher once again, while on the other side of the ball, Mark Ingram had 14 carries, 85 yards. Kamara had two touchdowns. Mark Ingram with the touchdown. They were just running the ball at will, and they could not be stopped. And Drew Brees passed Peyton Manning for second most on the completion list all time. He had 269 yards and a touchdown. It's been crazy to see this year that Drew Brees is having one of his best playing years, but one of his worst statistical years. But it's just because he's got a run game now, as I mentioned, with Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara. Alvin Kamara was part of primetime's top five players of week 13, and the man is looking like the lead runner for rookie of the year votes right now. He's just had over 100 yards total in the last five games. The man has been unstoppable. The Saints have been unstoppable, and they're now sitting with a 9-3 record, first place in the NFC South, getting a huge game separation from the Panthers, sitting there in second place with those Falcons as well, sitting right behind them. The NFC South is looking like one of those teams that might have two or three playoff teams in the wild card potentially, but as of today, the Saints are in first place in the NFC South. And let's give you a quick recap of where the divisions are before we get into our straight cash homie breakdown. In the AFC East, the New England Patriots have a four-game lead. In the AFC North, the Pittsburgh Steelers are in first place with a three-game lead. In the AFC South, the Tennessee Titans and the Jacksonville Jaguars are both tied in first with 8-4 records. In the AFC West, we all know that the Raiders, the Chargers, and the Chiefs are all tied in first place with 6-6 records. Moving on to the NFC, in the NFC East, the Philadelphia Eagles have a four-game lead in first place. In the NFC North, the Minnesota Vikings have a four-game lead in first place. In the NFC South, the New Orleans Saints have a one-game lead over the Panthers and a two-game lead over the Falcons in the NFC South. And then to wrap it up, in the NFC West, we got the Rams with a one-game lead over the Seattle Seahawks. And man, oh man, what a crazy season it's been. And what is going to happen in week 14, 15, and 16? Well, hey, let's go ahead and talk about what's going to happen right now in week 14 and break out the bets. Where's my man Randy at?
Straight cash, homie.
That's right. It's time for straight cash, homie, here on the Bay's Golden Days, where we look at every single matchup from the up-and-coming Week 14 of the 2017 NFL season and give you our picks and bets by the point spread to send you home with some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. And let's go ahead and kick it off with the Raiders and the Chiefs. We all remember the crucial Thursday night matchup from earlier in the year. The Raiders ended up winning that game 31-30 to cover the spread and win you some money. Well, this time, the tables have turned and the Raiders are now on the road in Kansas City, and the Chiefs are a 4-point favorite. But you want to talk about the tables turning. The last time we played the Chiefs, they had the best record in football. They were damn near, what, 6-1, sitting in first place in the AFC West. Well, guess what? Now they're 6-6, sitting right where the Raiders are, 6-6. And I've already mentioned it here on the podcast. The Chiefs have now lost 4 in a row, and they've lost 6 out of the last 7, and the Raiders will be looking to make it 7 out of the last 8. Because, man, oh, man, what a game that was last time we hooked up. I'm hoping the Raiders can come out and get it quicker than it did. I don't want to see 5 touchdown passes at the end of the game to win. I want to go in there and beat the brakes off the Chiefs and end their season. Yes, you heard me correctly. I want to demoralize the Chiefs so bad that they just know that they've lost 5 in a row and 7 out of their last 8. And I hope the Raiders can do it. And I honestly believe that they can. I've mentioned it. We've already beat it once this year on that crazy Thursday night game. Derek Carr threw for over 400 yards, and I think the biggest factor of this game is going to be if Amari Cooper is healthy, because we all know what Amari Cooper did to the Kansas City Chiefs last time they played. The band was rolling and jamming out AC/DC. Amari Cooper had over 200 yards, a couple touchdowns. He had more yards in that Chiefs game than he did any other game before that the previous 6 weeks combined. Amari Cooper was huge. Michael Crabtree will be returning from suspension this week. I think he has a big game. If you want to look at this defense from the Chiefs that have been struggling lately, you'd think with Marcus Peters, and if they could get anybody who could play a decent corner on the other side, they'd be a pretty good defense. But since Eric Berry went down with that injury, they've been falling apart. Even last week against the Jets, they had Jermaine Kearse go for 100 yards. They let Robbie Anderson go for over 100 yards. They let Matt Forte get a touchdown. They let Bill Pyle have 2 touchdowns. They let Josh McCown rush for 2 touchdowns. This is a defense that's struggling and gave up 38 points to the Jets. I think the Raiders can easily put up 30, hell, maybe even 40, and the Raiders defense did let up 30 points to the Chiefs last time they played. Well, guess what? Now we got Navarro Bowman. Now we're a lot better defense, and we have been playing a lot better these past couple weeks. We fired our defense coordinator. Ken Norton is gone. Hopefully, we can try to figure out something to slow down Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, because they both got back on pace last week. They both had 2 touchdowns each. Tyreek Hill burnt us the first game. Travis Kelce had an early touchdown, but was kind of shut down for the second half. I think if we can try to stop Kelce, he is more of a factor to me on a consistent basis for this offense to keep things going and going and going. But the big play threat, of course, is Tyreek Hill. Hopefully, maybe Dexter McDonald can step up. I've been talking about him lately. I don't want to see Sean Smith even on the same side of the field as Tyreek Hill, because there's no way he can try to keep up with his speed. But we're going to need help over the top. Hell, I want to see some 3 safety sets. Hell, bring in Obi Melifonwu just to play one-on-one man defense on Travis Kelce. Why not match him up? Why not bring in an extra DBs? Because that is obviously the weak part of our defense. And then on the ground, Kareem Hunt has been a shell of his former self from the first 6 weeks of the season to the second 6 weeks of the season. Alvin Kamara has made everybody completely forgot about Kareem Hunt. He has been struggling lately, and I think he has a worse game than he did the first game. He only had 87 yards, and I think 30 or 40 of those came off of one carry. But now with Navarro Bowman, man in the center, I think he plays a huge factor in shutting down Kareem Hunt, slowing down this Chiefs offense. And if we can slow down the Chiefs offense, I was actually putting up points this week. I don't think the Chiefs defense can stop us, to be honest. I've talked about hopefully the return of Amari Cooper dealing with the concussion and the ankle injury. If he comes back and has another huge game, I think Michael Crabtree comes off with a chip on his shoulder and tries to have even a bigger game than he did before. And if Amari Cooper's playing, most of the coverage should be rolled towards Cooper, so Crabtree should have a big game. If not, we had Cordell Patterson step up last week. We had Johnny Holton. We even saw Clive Walford step up for Jared Cook. I think we got the pieces to get it done. And then the man that has been performing so well these past 3 weeks, Marshawn Lynch. We're going to depend hugely on Marshawn Lynch in this game, and it's going to be huge for him not to get ejected. Yes, we all remember the little fight, the little skirmish when Marcus Peters hit Derek Carr late earlier this year. Well, Marshawn Lynch came out on the field, had to separate, had to keep the peace somehow, but he ended up pushing a referee. Marshawn, we cannot afford to lose you this game. The Raiders, they had great success in the first game running play action. We got to establish the run game early, build off the play action, go deep. I think the Raiders get the job done on the road, take possession of first place in the AFC West, and it's huge. We got to beat the Chiefs, and we got to beat the Chargers. It doesn't matter about the Cowboys and Eagles. We could split one-on-one if we do. Hell, even if we lose both those games, if we win both these games against the Chargers and the Chiefs, we will have control of our own destination. We'll have control of the tiebreakers, all that good stuff. We got to win. This is a huge game in the AFC West. It's win or go home. We cannot afford to give the Chiefs a one-game lead in the playoffs. So for that reason, I'm taking the Oakland Raiders, Amari Cooper to come back, ACDC to get turned up, and Beast Mode to get the win, plus 4 points in Kansas City. Let's go, Oakland Raiders all day. And then let's look at the rest of the matchups from week 14 of the NFL season. Kicking it off on Thursday Night Football, we got the Saints and the Falcons in a huge matchup in the NFC South. The Saints are sitting in first place, and the Falcons are 2 games back, and I think the Falcons are going to have to try to make up this game here. It's pretty much win or go home, but they are still looking pretty in a wild card spot. But if they want to win the division, they got to win against the Saints, and the Falcons might have a chance because we saw the Rams beat the Saints earlier this year, and honestly, I think the Falcons still have a more high power offense than the Rams. Yes, I know Jared Goff's having an amazing season, but just 1 year ago, Matt Ryan was an MVP. Don't forget about it. And also, if they're going to be missing Marshawn Lattimore, maybe the best corner for the Saints, Julio Jones should have a big day. I'll go ahead and take the Falcons at home on Thursday Night Football on a short week for the upset, plus 1.5 points. And then we move to Sunday morning, and we got the Colts and the Bills. And if you've been listening to my podcast, you know I just refuse to bet on the Colts without Andrew Luck. Well, that might have to change because the Bills don't have Tyrod Taylor. They have Nathan Peterman on their team. Peterman, the same guy who threw 5 interceptions in 1 half. You think I'm going to bet on him? No, I might just have to bet on Jacoby Brissett. This is probably going to be a game that is not too high scoring with a couple backup quarterbacks. Might want to take the under. I'll go ahead and take the Colts and Jacoby Brissett for the first time this year, plus 4 against the Buffalo Bills, because I don't think Peterman can even complete a couple passes. Hell, if he turns the ball over 1 or 2 times, the Colts should take this game. Next, we got the Vikings and the Panthers in a huge game in the NFC. This could be a potential playoff game. The Vikings have been playing well and have been steamrolling everybody, and it's been mostly because of their defense. They're shutting down the run. They're shutting down the pass. I think this defense gives Cam Newton some trouble. I like the Panthers' overall talent better, especially on the offside of the ball, but the Vikings are just playing so well, and they're so effective. Like I said, they're the number one team on third down on offense and defense. I might just have to stick with the Vikings -2.5 to get the win on the road over the Panthers. Moving on next, we got the Bears and the Bengals. The Bengals are favored by 6 points. We saw the Bengals actually come out and put up a fight on the Steelers, had a 17-0 lead, and then they blew it. They shot themselves in the foot with a bunch of penalties, but the Bears, they just lost to the Niners. I haven't seen the Bears do too much. They only ran 36 plays on offense all of last week. If the Bengals can just control the ball somehow, Andy Dalton should have a big day, and I'll look for the Bengals and AJ Green to get the win over the Bears by a touchdown, -6 points. Moving on to the next game, we got the Packers and the Browns. The 0-12 Browns will be looking for their first win of the season, and I will guarantee you that they won't get it if Aaron Rodgers is back. Yes, his status is still up in the air, but if Aaron Rodgers is back, I easily will take this -3 points in the Packers. But even with Adam and Brent Hundley, the way that the Packers have been playing lately and shown some life, I will take the Packers against the Browns -3 any day of the week. Moving on next, we got the 49ers and the Texans. And this is an interesting game, despite looking at the 2-10 record from the Niners versus the 4-8 record from the Texans. Well, I guess it's just going to be interesting to bet on, because we don't know. Who do we bet on? Tom Savage, who hasn't been reliable all year? Or Jimmy Garoppolo, the man who's 1-0 as a Niner, the man who's 1-0 against the point spread? This is going to be interesting. This is a game that I'll probably take the under on when I'm betting this weekend. I don't think it's going to be high scoring. Houston is favored by 3 points. They've been beat up. This is going to be a much better defense from the Texans than it was against the Bears. This is a tough one. 49ers, Texans. I might just have to take the 49ers -3, because that gives me a little bit of insurance with a field goal. So if they lose by field goal, it's still a push. I might just have to take Jimmy G to be more productive than Tom Savage. That's really what it comes down to. And then we move on next to the Lions and the Buccaneers. The Lions have been struggling as of lately, but they still sit there with a 6-6 record, while the Buccaneers are sitting there with a 4-8 record. Their season is pretty much lost. But the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are favored by 1 point. And if Matthew Stafford is healthy, he did hurt his hand a little bit last week, but if Matthew Stafford's healthy, no doubt about it, I will take the Lions +1 point to get the upset on the road. I don't even know how the Buccaneers are favored the way that they've been playing, but hey, Jameis Winston's back. They still got a chance, but I like the Lions and Matthew Stafford to get a fourth quarter win and cover that +1 point spread. Moving on next, we got the Cowboys and the Giants. Dak Prescott got his first win last week without Ezekiel Elliott, and the New York Giants fired their head coach, fired their general manager, fired the whole entire team pretty much, because they're putting Eli Manning back in at quarterback. They're going to try to figure things out. I don't know. I thought the Giants just weren't trying to win any games this year. They wanted Sam Darnold or Rosen, one of the college quarterbacks. Who knows what the Giants are doing? I don't think they're going to win on Sundays. So that, for that reason alone, I will take the Cowboys -4 points on the road to get the job done over the Giants. Next, we got the Titans and the Cardinals. The Cardinals have been playing decent with Blaine Gabbert at quarterback, but you got to remember, he's still Blaine Gabbert. And the Titans are favored by 3 points. They got the job done last week. They won by more than a touchdown on Derrick Henry's late game-winning touchdown. Well, let's see if they can do it again. I'm taking the Titans -3 points on the road over the Cardinals. Moving on next, we got the Jets and the Broncos in a game that, who the hell is betting on the Jets and the Broncos? There's nothing worse than betting on the Jets, and there's nothing worse than, for me at least, betting on the Broncos, the way that they've been playing this year. You'd think this Broncos defense would still keep teams in games, but they've just been terrible. Honest, they've been getting toasted left and right, and the Jets just toasted the Chiefs last week. The Jets are one of the biggest head scratchers for me of the whole entire season. I didn't think they'd win a game. Now they're sitting here at 5-7. Do they technically still have a shot at the wild card? I guess so. Do I pick the Jets -1? Do I think the Broncos get the win? I don't even know, to be honest with you. I'll just stick with the AFC West and go with the Broncos +1 for the point. So who the hell knows? But I'm telling you, honestly, don't bet on this game. I'm not betting on it either. Moving on next, we got the Redskins and the Chargers. The Chargers sitting in first place in the AFC West, tied with the Raiders and the Chiefs with that 6-6 record. The Redskins sitting there at 5-7. Tried to make it interesting last week against the Cowboys, but got left behind in the second half. This is a Redskins team that, I guess, maybe is it a little underrated, even though they can't get the job done and win. They've been dealing with a lot of injuries. They're down to their rookie running back, Shamash Perrine. I think the Chargers keep it rolling. Do they win by a touchdown, though? That's an interesting one. If you get the Redskins +7, that might be a good bet. But if it's 6, I'll go ahead and take the Chargers by a touchdown to win the game. Moving on next, we got the Seahawks and the Jaguars. The Jaguars are favored by 3 points. And man, oh man, I thought I'd never see Blake Bortles favored against the Seahawks. This is going to be an interesting one, and I might have to go with the upset, the Seahawks plus 3. The Seahawks defense really impressed me last week against Carson Wentz. I've talked about it. I thought the Seahawks might be falling out of the playoff race without Sherman and Cam Chancellor, but Russell Wilson's playing better than ever. If he can connect with Jimmy Graham over the middle, because he's not going to be able to connect with his wide receivers on the outside matched up against Ramsey and Boyu, I think Jimmy Graham and Russell Wilson have a big day, and I'll go ahead and take the Seahawks plus 3 for the upset over the Jaguars. Blake Bortles against that Legion of Boom defense. There's just something's bound to happen. I'll take the Seahawks plus 3. And then we move on to our next game. We got the Eagles on the road against the Rams. This is a lot of surprise, surprise team. A lot of people were surprised picking them for the NFC Championship just a couple weeks ago. We'll see if those picks stick. But this is truly going to be a playoff preview game because both these teams should get in. The Rams are favored by 2 points at home over the Eagles. But the last time that we did see the Rams lose is when they went up against an experienced defense in the Minnesota Vikings. Well, hey, you want to talk about experienced defense? The Eagles have been top in the defensive ranks all season long. They're one of the top rush defenses in the league. So for that reason alone, I think that they're going to do a better job trying to contain Todd Gurley than the Rams are against Jay Ajayi, LeGarrette Blount, and all the weapons that they have out of the backfield. I think Carson Wentz bounces back from this loss, gives Jared Goff a wake up and say, hey, I was the number one pick. You are number two. Don't forget that. I'll go ahead and take the Eagles plus 2 points on the road against the Rams to get the upset victory. Then we get the Sunday Night Football, and we got the Ravens and the Steelers. And I feel like the Steelers have been in primetime football for like 5 weeks in a row, and that explains why they've won 4 or 5 games in a row. The Steelers sitting with a 10-2 record will try to take out the Ravens, who are sitting at 7-5 and are sitting pretty in a wild card spot right now. The Pittsburgh Steelers are favored by 5.5 points, and if I'm going to listen to my advice from earlier, I should take the Ravens plus the points. I should take the Ravens to only lose by a field goal or so because the Steelers just seem like they never covered a spread. But I am for sure taking the Steelers to win. God, this is where it gets tricky, though, against the Ravens and the spread. Fuck it. Why not? The Pittsburgh Steelers did win by 17 points the first time they played the Ravens. Go ahead and give me the Steelers minus 5.5 points to finally win by a touchdown. You cocksucking Steelers better cover the spread and give us all some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. And then we move on from Sunday Night Football to Monday Night Football. We got the Patriots and the Dolphins. Before I even look at the point spread, I already know it's going to be 10 plus points. And what a surprise. Look at that. The Patriots are favored by 11.5 points against the Dolphins, who got a win against the Broncos last week. But I've said I'm not impressed with the Dolphins at all. I don't want to watch the Dolphins. I don't like watching the Patriots. I don't like Tom Brady. I don't like Sarah High School. I don't like anything about that all-boys school. And I don't want to have anything to do with this game on Monday night. But I will take the Patriots to win by the 11.5 point spread. And that is every single game from Week 14 of the 2017 NFL season by the point spread right here on the Bay's Golden Days Straight Cash, homie. And let's run it back for you real quick. On Thursday Night Football, I got the Falcons for the upset plus 1.5 points at home. On Sunday, I like the Colts for the upset plus 4 over the Bills, the Vikings to take care of the Panthers minus 2.5, the Bengals to beat the Bears minus 6, the Packers to beat the Browns minus 3, the 49ers to upset the Texans plus 3 or to lose by a field goal, the Raiders to upset the Chiefs plus 4 points, the Lions to upset the Buccaneers plus 1, the Cowboys to beat the Giants minus 4, the Titans to beat the Cardinals minus 3, the Broncos to beat the Jets plus 1, the Chargers to beat the Redskins minus 6, the Seahawks to upset the Jaguars plus 3, the Eagles to upset the Rams plus 2, the Steelers to beat the Ravens minus 5.5, and the Patriots to beat the Dolphins on Monday night by 11.5 points. That should be a blowout, and hopefully there's a lot of blowouts to win you some money this weekend right here on the Bay's Golden Days. I'm Marcus Boucher. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading on iTunes, Google Play, wherever the hell podcasts are available. You can check them out instantly on BGDSports.com. And just like I've been saying all year, the Raiders are still alive. 13 weeks into the season. Who would have thought it? Me. Marcus Boucher would have thought it. I've been saying it all year long. I've been harping it on this podcast. Tell your mom. Tell your sister. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Send a post note. Send a pigeon mail. I don't care. Tell somebody that the Raiders are getting into the playoffs and tell them they should have been listening to the Bay's Golden Days podcast the whole damn year, because we winning money, we covering the Raiders, and we doing the damn thing. You know what it is, baby. Bay's Golden Days, we out.
Sold it. Sold it. Sold it.
Stay gold, pony boy.